This is Melange à deux, a Vienna podcast. Herzlich willkommen. Hi, everybody. This is Frau Batsby, and I'm with Herr X. Say hello.
Hello.
And we are now at part three of Empress Elizabeth. Are you ready?
Elizabeth.
And yeah, this is the final of the three. I could have done 16 episodes of this, but...
We did a lot of research. I used the royal we.
We. Oh, that's perfect. The royal we for this
yes.
series.
Imperial we.
Before we get started, I want to wish my parents a happy 50th wedding anniversary coming up on Saturday.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. Well, they made it. and what else? Oh, we have our Hallmark Christmas party coming up this Saturday.
Yeah, it should be a blast.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of baking, and I'm terrible at baking, but there'll be a cheese board.
And I will show up.
You'll show up.
Yes. I will grace everyone with my presence.
Aww. And then tonight is the last night of Hanukkah, so I'm making matzo ball soup.
All right.
And we can do some dreidel.
Jewish penicillin.
Jewish penicillin. I cannot wait. And yeah, also I've noticed that there are so many more tourists in the city than ever before.
Yeah. Well, finally we can, well, luckily we don't give them the New York treatment, which is just yelling at them for walking too slow.
I'm close. I'm about to lose it. Yeah, and also when I was doing some final research for this last part, I decided to look up. So there's that famous painting of Sisi with the stars in her hair, like the diamond and pearl stars.
Yeah.
So I looked up these stars that this one jeweler here makes in Vienna. Starting price of one of these stars? Want to take a guess?
No. I anything I guess was still surprising.
Starting at 13,000 euros.
What? Wait, what is this?
Is it a car? Those stars that she has in her hair, these like little
stars. But this is replicas.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
this is not
diamond.
The original star.
No, no. It was diamonds and a pearl, but it's starting at 13,000.
Oh, okay.
So you can get the fake replicas with crystals at the museum. I have the earrings and the necklace. And they're lovely, and they're much cheaper. Much.
13,000.
13,000. So, yeah, don't worry. I don't need those for Christmas. Gotta collect them all. Are you sweating?
Yeah, I'm sweating now. For listeners at home.
So, I guess we'll get started unless you have anything else to add.
No? Let's get started. Let's get started.
Okay. So, when we ended the last episode... Sisi had just met Hungarian Andrássy.
Yes.
Who you dislike because... Why?
It's the leopard...
The leopard print?
Yeah, the leopard print. No, it was just, you know, it was several times where you mentioned he's extremely handsome. Very handsome.
I did not. It was described as dashing.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I never get described as dashing.
I think you're very dashing. All right. What else? Oh, yeah. So they have two surviving children at this point because Sophie had passed away when she was two. And then they have Rudolf, the future emperor at the time, and Marie. Oh, no. Sorry. Gisela. Sorry. Gisela and Rudolf. Gisela is the oldest daughter. And Sophie, Archduchess, the mother-in-law, is still around. And Rudolf is an incredibly sensitive little boy. And he was the one who they... She kind of interfered with his education because he was being probably beaten daily. So at this time, Franz Josef and Sisi spend 5 weeks in Hungary because they're trying to work out this deal with Hungary. And the Viennese court is very upset about this because they don't trust Hungary at all. There's also a rumor that she is starting an affair with Andrássy, but this is never confirmed. Your face. But they're very close. So Prussia... is at this time making gains towards Vienna. There's this one battle called the Battle of Königgrätz, which has 450,000 soldiers fighting.
Yeah. That's big.
That's like half, that's like half a million people. Rudolf is 8 at the time, and Sisi sends him letters while he's in Bad Ischl about the fighting, like going into detail. So this poor kid, who's already pretty sensitive, is getting play-by-play about what is happening. So... In July, Sisi brings the kids to Budapest, and Archduchess Sophie is outraged because she hates Hungary. Also, a Hungarian stabbed her son years ago, and her first granddaughter, her namesake, died in Hungary. So yeah. she's upset. She thinks that the humid air and bad water of Budapest could be bad for Rudolph.
Hmm.
The son, yeah. He's the only one that matters. She really hates Hungary. Bismarck doesn't want Hungary to join with Austria, but Sisi's popularity is key to the unification. So as I said, like, she's absolutely loved by Hungary, and she speaks fluent Hungarian. Andrássy pretty much uses Sisi to help with the Hungarian cause. She writes the longest letters to Franz Josef that she ever has, imploring him to meet Hungary's demand. Franz Josef starts to agree with this idea. Franz Josef is very unpopular in general. The summer is super hot at that time.
Very unpopular in Hungary.
In Vienna, too, in a way.
Is it economic stuff? Or?
Economics. It's so hot in Vienna at the time, so disease is kind of rampant. Exiled nobility is coming from Germany and Italy to Vienna. Prussians are now at Pressburg. Wounded soldiers are arriving daily in Vienna. And Napoleon III is also not interested in helping Austria at all. Sisi continues to stay in Budapest, and Franz Josef begs her to visit, and she's like, no. she says the air is better in Budapest. Franz Josef is a wreck as the wars are starting to bankrupt the country. She then writes him and says she wants to buy a castle in Hungary. in a letter, he says to her, paraphrased, you can go to that castle to meet with wounded soldiers, but don't show any interest in purchasing the property. I is broke. I'm just looking.
You can meet with the realtor, but don't look too excited.
I was like, when we came to this apartment and it was like completely under construction, and I was like, I love it. I want it.
I was like, okay.
So meanwhile, Emperor Max, who is in Mexico with his wife Charlotte, apparently Charlotte has come to France to ask Napoleon III for his support because the native population is starting to riot against this emperor, the Austrian Emperor Max. Everyone is really surprised by this news because Max's letter to his mom have been incredibly optimistic.
Everything's fine.
Love it. Tamales, got the guac, got my Corona.
I got invited to 5 quinceañeras.
Yeah, this is amazing. Also, it takes about 8 to 10 weeks for letters to arrive from Mexico.
So maybe the time delay. Maybe
he's like, oh no. And so at this point, no one's really paying attention to Max because from his letters, they're just assuming that everything's good. Charlotte, apparently, who's a little bit smarter, has gone to Europe to try to get support. Finally, in late August, peace is declared with Prussia. After 2 months of being in Budapest, Sisi and her kids finally returned to Vienna in early September. So in October, Charlotte, the wife of Max, has gone to see the Pope for help after Napoleon III refuses. He also says, nope. And this leads to Charlotte having a complete mental breakdown.
Mm.
She ends up being brought to Castle Miramar in Trieste, like pretty much because she's declared insane.
Mm-hmm.
And she, for the rest of her life, never knows what happens to her husband or anything else because she just has a complete mental breakdown.
What?
And she lives until 1927.
Oh.
But I don't think she was all
there.
Max decides to stay in Mexico. And I will do
a
whole thing on Max. It was absolutely fascinating. I had actually put a lot of information in, and I was like, no, I'm saving this because it was incredible.
I still remember the first day I heard about this. I was like, Max, the Emperor of Mexico? What?
Well, there was a skier years ago who represented Mexico, and he was Austrian. It was so funny. He wasn't a great skier, but yeah, I thought that was amazing. So Franz Josef visits Bohemia post-war, and it's a disaster. The fields have been destroyed in battle, so of course there's nothing growing. There's a lot of resentment. A Czech national even attempts to assassinate Franz Josef in a Prague theater.
Mm.
It's kind of considered a big powder keg.
This is the second assassination.
I think there were many.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But this one was, So June 8th, 18th.
Wait, this is around just a bit after Lincoln. Like, you would think people would just start avoiding theaters, you know?
Yeah. And then the home theater was created. And Netflix.
Let's stay in tonight.
Wait, when was Lincoln assassinated?
1860s, right?
Yeah. So this was 1860s. It was a really popular time for assassinations.
It's like, you know what? The best place to do this is...
theaters. So June 8th, 1867, Franz Josef becomes the King of Hungary. Hungarian composer Franz Liszt composed a coronation song. It's very nationalistic. But he was not allowed to conduct it at the ceremony, and the Hofburg choir and a non-Hungarian conductor led the song, and this really ticked off the Hungarians. the celebration was also ridiculously opulent. Also, Andrássy helps purchase the castle that Sisi wanted earlier. Your face.
Whoa, no.
Crossing the line.
So when does he die? He dies soon thereafter. I was... Come on, the emperor would be like, you know, thank you for the gift. And then, you know, he gives the...
he just slices throat. So I just think, you know, she vision boarded that castle and she got it. So 10 days later, June 18th, 1867, Ferdinand Maximilian is executed in Mexico.
Hmm.
And again, I will save this for another time because it's absolutely fascinating. So Max is executed, and Sophie is at the mother, mm-hmm. Archduchess Sophie, is devastated. And for the 5 years left in her life, she mourned him deeply. Sisi also loved Max very much, and she's upset. And they were very, very close until he married Charlotte.
Mm.
But she still loved him, of course. Franz Josef, who loved Max, but saw him as a rival, was upset, but kind of kept it together, because this is Franz Josef, and he's the emperor. So just after the coronation, and around the time of the death of Max, Sisi decides that she's ready to have one more child,
mm.
kind of as a gift to Hungary. So 10 months later, April 22nd, 1868, is the birth of Archduchess Marie Valerie. The Hungarians consider that she is their child. They consider her the only royal of Hungary.
So what this leopard shawl guy, maybe that's what they thought, is that...
yeah, it could be. Yeah. She comes out in leopard print. I knew it. So the Hungarians, yeah, they consider that she is their one royal child. The christening is in Hungary, and there is a huge celebration. Andrássy and Franz Josef compete in a shooting competition at the christening.
Oh, no, I accidentally shot him in the head.
Andrássy wins.
I let him win.
Yeah. So Marie Valerie is Sisi's favorite child because she no longer has her mother-in-law trying to take over and run everything. And Sisi finally starts to enjoy motherhood. And also, her mother-in-law just doesn't have the energy to fight Sisi. She's done. So Sisi spends most of her time traveling with her daughter, and they spend a lot of time in Budapest. When the opera house in Vienna opens for the first time, she misses the performance, which was Don Giovanni by Mozart. That was the first performance at the opera house.
Mm.
They had to keep postponing this for her and its grand opening because she was delaying coming back from Budapest. And then that night that they're going to show it, she just doesn't show up. So people are really, really upset about this. She really hates doing public appearances at hospitals. She'd rather show up randomly with just one attendant. She didn't like the fanfare of like this whole, almost like press pictures. She would rather go and talk to the patients themselves privately. And she tested their food. The administrators hated it, but the patients absolutely loved her.
I'm sure.
She also caused scandal by going to a cholera hospital and shaking hands with someone who was dying, which is just like Princess Diana and the AIDS patient when she shook their hands. So you do see a lot of similarities between the two. Around this time, she also became fascinated with insane asylums and different afflictions. One birthday, she writes Franz Josef and says that she would like for her birthday, so I'm paraphrasing this. Quote, either a young Bengal tiger
mm-hmm.
or a locket, but what I would like best of all is a fully equipped insane asylum.
I see a common theme.
So he buys her the locket, and she writes him 4 days later, quote, thanks for the locket. I see you appear to not have given the other two things a moment's consideration. Yeah.
I thought they were door number one, door number two, door number three.
She's like, opens it. She's like, where's my insane asylum?
I made it clear.
So the oldest daughter, Gisela, is now 15, and Sisi thinks it's time for her to get married, which is actually ironic because she hated the idea of being married so young when she had to go through it. But then she kind of sets up a courtship for her daughter. But then ironically also her younger daughter, when it's time, Cece's like, I wouldn't care if you married a chimney sweep. So she's the favorite. Gisella is considered unattractive. I looked at pictures. I think she's actually very cute, but she was considered very unattractive.
Well, you can't tell with those black and white pictures. Everyone looked the same.
Yeah. No, I guess they thought she didn't get the best genes. Cece decides that she should be married to Prince Leopold of Bavaria. At the time, he was actually promised to Princess Amalie of Coburg, but Cece invited him to Hungary and convinced him. One countess said about Gisella, quote, "She is happy, as a child will be. A beautiful couple they are not."
Princess Amalie of Coburg would be for the British royal family, no? The Coburg?
Is it British?
Weren't they before? I think that was their name before they changed it to Windsor.
Really?
Remember with the war and everything, I think it was something Coburg.
I have to look that up. I know the Palais Coburg here. We had dinner at the... Yeah, the hotel. Mm-hmm. It's fancy. So Leopold, who Gisella is supposed to marry, felt really bad about Amalie having to end the engagement. But then Cece later on gets Amalie married off happily. So I guess that was her, what's it called? Paying amends. Mm-hmm. And Leopold, what he said about Gisella when he met her, he goes, Gisella is so nice. She has her father's kind eyes.
That is a nice thing to say.
Okay. But I think they were actually a decent match. I will never forget when we brought home the dog, Morty, and you were like, oh, he has his mother's eyes. And I was like, thank you.
I'm like, I'm talking about his actual mom.
All right, so May 27th, 1872, the mother-in-law dies, Sophie. There had been a bedside vigil for 10 days. Cece had been in Italy, but she comes during this time. She stayed with her to the end. I don't know, with a pillow in her hand.
No, I'm sure she was nice.
Yeah, she's just really making sure Sophie's done. Because she just, yeah, they never were very close. So then this was actually a funny thing I read in the book, which was like a little side tidbit about Franz Josef. So dinner time with the emperor, you know, you would have the nobility coming, and he never ate that much food, and he ate really, really quickly and quietly. Like, he just would kind of wolf it down. But when he was done, everybody else has to stop. They can't keep eating. So when the emperor is done eating, it all goes away. So the Sacre Hotel did very well at this time because the nobility would rush afterwards to have their dinner.
They're still hungry.
They were still hungry, so they'd go to the Sacre Hotel, which I thought was fascinating. We gotta make an appointment. A reservation. We have to do dinner there soon.
Yes.
April 1873, Gisella gets married. She quickly has two daughters. Cece wrote about her second granddaughter, quote, Gisella's child is of a rare ugliness, but very lively. It looks exactly like Gisella. Poor Gisella.
Jeez.
Rough. So December 1873 was the 25-year celebration of Franz Josef being emperor. The city had improved dramatically because they had brought down the wall. There was complete growth. And in just 25 years, Vienna had grown from 500,000 to a million people. Hygiene had also improved. Cece continues to travel and withdraw more and more. She starts to wear veils in public and hide in covered carriages. She absolutely hates public appearances. She just is done. In the summer of 1875, former Emperor Ferdinand, Franz Josef's uncle, suddenly dies in Prague. So originally, Ferdinand was supposed to be, was emperor. Mm-hmm. He abdicates. It was supposed to go to Franz Josef's father. Mm-hmm. Franz Josef's father says, no thanks, because Sophie really pushes it. And that's why Franz Josef is king. So when Ferdinand dies, it turns out he's incredibly wealthy, so much money, and he makes Franz Josef his sole heir. So Franz Josef had money as emperor, but not this amount of money. Mm-hmm. And so he gives Cece more money on her yearly grant, kind of like her allowance, and it gives her so much more freedom. And then she starts going to England for annual fox hunts. She really enjoys going to England. It's 1879, and Cece is 41, and Franz Josef is 48, and she looks great. He looks aged.
Well, Well, it's like being president, but imagine like 8-year terms times
25 years. He's done. He jokes that he's losing his memory. Cece's never around, and people talk about his isolation and loneliness. That was kind of the ongoing thing, as everybody always felt so sorry for him. He wakes up every day at 4 and eats his breakfast at his desk while he works.
Mm-hmm.
Al Desco. People in the court continue to dislike her, and all she wants to do is ride because everything else bores her. She also continues to go to Ireland and sets up a stable there, which really ticks off Queen Victoria. Cece writes that she loves Ireland because there are no royals there. Because every time she goes to a city or a country, she has to meet with the nobility, and she just hates doing that. There are still legends in Ireland about her being a mysterious fairy queen on horseback. And some families in Ireland still own her handkerchiefs that she would drop in great quantities.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. We'll see that on the Antique Roadshow. While in London, she receives a telegram saying that her son Rudolph is engaged to Princess Stephanie, daughter of the King of Belgians. Cece is not a fan of Belgium because Charlotte, who was married to her brother Mexico Max, is also from the same family.
Hmm.
She heads to Brussels where the engagement just happened, and this is the first time she meets Stephanie, her son's future bride. Because of political reasons, Cece has to give up her stables in Ireland. She rides a little bit longer in England, but then stops. Instead, she takes up hiking. Her ladies-in-waiting are now chosen based on their physical fitness and not their ranking and nobility.
You must be able to carry Empress up.
Not carry. She would hike. She was so obsessed with exercise.
So they had to keep up.
They had to keep it. She had to do like 6 hours. She would do 6-hour hikes.
Wow.
At least. She also preferred walking in the middle of the night so that people wouldn't see her on the trails.
Wow.
So she was obsessed about hiking and exercise. One time in her 40s, she goes to a masquerade ball in a mask wearing all yellow. And this was at the Musikverein for Mardi Gras. She kind of went incognito. It was a chance. And she did that when she traveled too. She didn't want people to know who she was. So she has this really fun evening with one man. There's kind of a flirtation. He may or may not have known who she was. They corresponded for a few weeks after the ball, and she would have like a fake P.O. box from Munich. And then the letters just stopped. She remained anonymous. Then suddenly, 11 years later, this man received a letter from her. Still anonymous. She asks him for a picture of himself. So what he does is he sends a picture of his wife and child. She doesn't write back. And apparently was very upset about that. And then 2 years later, she wrote once again, like a random letter, and then never again.
That's odd.
I think she had this little fantasy in her mind that she would have this kind of chaste affair. Oh, your face. So as she withdrew more and more, she became closer with her cousin. This is King Ludwig II of Bavaria.
Mm.
His grandfather was the brother to Cece's mother, Ludovico.
Okay.
So, or Ludovica. Ludwig was incredibly eccentric. If he didn't like a dinner guest, he would place a large bouquet of flowers on the dining room table so he wouldn't have to see them.
I mean, it's... I'll start doing that.
You're just going to be at work. Someone walks in and you put in like a potted plant. As I said, he was very eccentric, and Ludwig liked to call himself the Virgin King. It is assumed he was gay. So he never got married. He never was with a woman. He was briefly engaged to Cece's younger sister, Sophie. They actually got along very, very well, but platonically. He ended the engagement and then threw her bust out of the window of the castle. he only wanted to see Cece when the entourage was in town, and he was mad every time she brought her daughter, Marie Valerie. It's like the woman from Modern Family who hates Lily.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he had a mental illness, which was clear to Cece. And Cece believed that it was a hereditary thing in her family. By the 1880s, Ludwig was sleeping most of the days, riding alone at night, and had cut off most of his family. Modern psychiatrists believe that he suffered from schizophrenia. Oh. And depression also, of course, ran in the family. In the summer of 1886, Ludwig was removed by the government as king and declared insane, and shortly thereafter, he committed suicide by drowning himself in a lake.
Oof.
Cece fell apart at the news. She was also rumored to be seeing a medium who was an old friend, Countess Palmgarten. So at this time, to be fair, seances were very en vogue around this time. Her son, Crown Prince Rudolf, was very anti-spiritualist and even wrote an anonymous pamphlet against it in a thinly veiled admonishment against his mother, because she was really going to this otherworldly spiritualism, and he found it dumb. So in the mid-1880s already, Cece starts to talk about suicide quite openly.
Ooh.
She's kind of done with everything. Around this time, Franz Josef builds her a villa in Linzer Tiergarten, which we have to go to, which I've actually never been to. It's called the Hermes Villa.
Oh.
Not after
I thought it was a lot of scarves.
the...
And Birkin bags.
Birkin bags, yeah, just all the Birkin bags, the building blocks. It was named the Hermes Villa after her favorite Greek god. Her bedroom was covered in frescoes depicting A Midsummer's Night Dream. So remember, that was her favorite play, and Franz Josef thought it was stupid. So she would only stay a few nights in the villa and kept traveling. Now in her early 50s, her looks had faded, and she would hide behind large fans and under umbrellas. She hated being photographed. She was also suffering from severe sciatica and depression. And then this was a part of the book, but I won't go into it. But it turns out that Cece was actually very pro-Jew, and so was Rudolf, which at the time was considered
Was very, very liberal,
very
right?
liberal, very left. So, 1881, Prince Rudolf marries Stephanie of Belgium. Cece is not a fan of her because she reminds her of that sister-in-law that she hated, Charlotte. Rudolf has mostly been ignored by his mother his whole life. The only time that she really paid attention was with his tutoring. Otherwise, she's ignored him. He is 9 years old when her favorite child is born, Marie Valerie. He turns into a sensitive young man and is very similar to his mother. He begs his father to attend the Vienna University to study natural sciences, but is forbidden as the royal family just doesn't go to school. Franz Josef insists he become a soldier, which was kind of
The way.
the way. I don't want to go too much into Rudolph because that's going to be another podcast series as well. But it is important to note that he was very pro-constitutional, pro-constitution, and actually anti-monarchist, which is ironic because he was going to be.
Well, it's a way of rebelling.
Yeah, no doubt. I want to be king. But he's 45. He's like, oh, you know what? I should have been
You
king.
know what? I think he was right.
He's working an office job. He's like, oh man.
But that's his life, right? It's like, when you're young, you're like, no, you know what? My parents don't know anything. And then when you're in your 40s, you're like, you know what?
You know
They
what? They knew what they
knew a
were.
lot.
Yeah, never realized how important sleep was. And you get older, you're like, oh, you know what?
Sleep is
I should have
great.
taken those naps in kindergarten. So as I said, Rudolph and Cece are actually incredibly similar politically and emotionally, but they're not close at all. Rudolph starts having marital issues with Stephanie, and Cece does not get involved because she thinks of her own mother-in-law getting involved in her marriage. Rudolph becomes ill for a while, and it is officially said to be a bladder infection, but it was most likely gonorrhea.
Ooh.
This sends him into a depression. At Christmas 1888, the youngest daughter, her favorite daughter, Marie Valerie, gets engaged to Franz Salvatore. He's a prince who is from the Tuscan branch of the family. Hey, Tuscan,
The
great
Tuscan
food.
Habsburgs.
Tuscanism.
Hey.
Hey, bada bing, yeah.
It's a Habsburgo.
Habsburgo. So then, January, so during this Christmas, when there's the engagement, there's a moment where Rudolph breaks into tears and hugs Cece, and it's just a very weird outburst. Because then, January 30th, 1889, about a month later, Crown Prince Rudolph commits suicide in Meierling. And it's maybe a murder suicide because he's with his mistress, Maria Vetsera. But again, I won't go into too much detail. Cece is the first to find out, and she just is very stoic until the funeral, and then she just falls apart.
I'm sure.
I can't even imagine. As soon as she finds out, she goes immediately to find Franz Josef's mistress, who is waiting at the Hofburg, and leads her directly to Franz Josef to comfort him.
What? Your husband will see you now.
Yeah, because this is around the late 1880s. Franz Josef has started an affair with actress Katharina Schratt. The Empress actually condones the relationship because this gives her a chance to leave him more. Not happening in our relationship, but okay. Talk about her another.
The nervous laughter, was it?
You know what your mistress is going to be? An Xbox. I'll leave you with the Xbox. Yeah, so also after the suicide, they kind of blame his wife, Stephanie, for it, which I think is a little unfair. Yeah. Yeah, you find out that your husband's, like, committed suicide with his mistress, and they're like, what'd you do?
I mean, these are the questions we want to know. There had to be something.
So it's so tragic. Again, as I said, I will go into that another podcast because it is another fascinating story. So this was pretty much it, I think, for Cece. She, you know, her two daughters are married. She's kind of falling into deeper depression.
And the two others are dead.
Are dead. Yeah. And Franz Josef has moved on with his mistress. I think she's just, you know, and she never really wanted to be the empress. Like, she just really wanted to live a life of writing. She kind of lived in her own little world. And she's a tragic character. So Cece continues to travel as much as she can. She never really spends any more time in Vienna. She continues with her starvation diets and ends up being around 93 pounds.
Ooh.
And she's, in her late 50s, early 60s. She's tiny.
And she was tall.
Yeah, she was like 5'9".
Yeah.
Yeah, so she was emaciated. She surrounds herself with mostly Greeks when she travels, and they're all in their 20s. I guess she likes to have fit people so they can go hiking.
It seems like she liked everywhere. She's like Madeira, Ireland, Greece.
You know? Everywhere but Vienna.
Yeah.
And we're like, we are not leaving this city. We are staying in Vienna. We can travel. But so this is getting towards the end.
Mm.
So I'm going to read a paragraph. So, quote, at 1:35 p.m. on Saturday 10th, September 1898, Elizabeth and Countess Irma, her lady-in-waiting, left the hotel on the shore of Lake Geneva on foot to catch the steamship Genève for Montreux. Since the Empress despised procession, she insisted that they walk without the other members of her entourage.
Hmm.
And she kind of thinks that she's being incognito while she's in Geneva. They were walking along the promenade when the 25-year-old Italian anarchist Luigi Luceni approached them, attempting to peer underneath the Empress's parasol. According to the lady-in-waiting, as the ship's bell announced the departure, Luceni seemed to stumble and made a movement with his hand as if he wanted to maintain his balance. In reality, however, in an act of, quote, propaganda of the deed, quote, he had stabbed Elizabeth with a sharpened needle file that was 4 inches long that he had inserted into a wooden handle. Luceni originally planned to kill the Duke of Orleans, but the pretender to France's throne had left Geneva earlier for the Valais.
Hmm.
Failing to find him, the assassin selected Elizabeth when a Geneva newspaper revealed that the elegant woman traveling under the pseudonym of, quote, Countess of Hohenems, quote, was the Empress of Austria.
Mm.
He was quoted as saying, I am an anarchist by conviction. I came to Geneva to kill a sovereign with object of giving an example to those who suffer and those who do nothing to improve their social position. It did not matter to me who was the sovereign. Who the sovereign was whom I should kill. It was not a woman I struck, but an empress. It was a crown that I had in view.
So he just wanted any head of state. Just like, you know what?
Yeah. He's like, oh, I missed that guy. Oh, I guess I'll go for her. And the crazy thing is that this newspaper published that it was her. She didn't want to be known. She just liked to travel secretly. So blood on their hands. So Cece did not realize that she had been stabbed. She's so corseted up that she can't really feel much.
Oh, no. So she gets stabbed. She has no idea.
She has no idea. She's actually able to walk onto the boat. She kind of stumbles and then gets on the boat, and then she collapses. They open up her dress, and they see a small stab wound. Mm. And there was very little blood because the constriction of the...
Right. It acted like a tourniquet almost.
Yeah. Her lung is punctured. They get her back to Geneva, and she dies a short time afterwards.
Mm.
And there's an autopsy, and apparently there's a picture of the wound that the, what's the guy called? Not the undertaker.
Oh, the medical examiner, yeah.
He took a picture of it, you know, for the files.
The ME, as it's known in the trade. Oh, we watch ME. A lot of Law and Order.
Jack McCoy. Yeah, so they take a picture of it. Franz Josef has the picture destroyed. And again, it was kind of similar to Diana. I think there were pictures of the paparazzi had taken of her body, and those were destroyed as well. So the news spreads very quickly. Everybody's just so incredibly shocked. And the funny thing was that Sisi was buying property in Switzerland because she always had a feeling that the monarchy was going to fall. Because
For tax purposes.
For tax purposes. And for the chocolates and the fondue. So she kind of, and she had told her kids, like, Switzerland is the place that you can safely go when the monarchy finally falls. Because she kind of saw the writing on the wall. These big kingdoms were starting to...
This was what year?
This was the late 1800s. Wow. Yeah, so she kind of figured it out. I mean, I guess, you know, you have a feeling that... Franz Josef, while he was considered a decent emperor, he wasn't hugely popular. Yeah. Anarchists were popping up everywhere.
Well, he's kind of like the captain of the ship. Like, he'll be the last one, you know, to leave type thing.
Yeah, so. And I think Austria had kind of a very antiquated constitution and, you know, parliamentary... stuff had happened, but I think it was kind of behind the times. And I think France was probably a good indication from 100+ years ago could happen. So, yeah, I think she, you know, it's she dies in Switzerland, and that's kind of where she thought she would end up dying anyway. So when Franz Josef was informed of her death, he was at his desk, and he looked at her painting, his favorite painting of her, which you can see at the museum, and he simply said, quote, "You have no idea how much I loved this woman," end quote. Makes me very emotional. Maybe sad when I die.
You're not
I'm stabbed by an anarchist named Luigi.
No, that's, that's a sad ending.
It's a very sad ending.
But she was very, involved really in the, what is the term called? When basically Austria-Hungary became, you know, the dual...
The unification.
Yeah?
Yeah, she was completely... She was the most important part of it. And because they loved her so much and she loved the Hungarians, it really helped. And she's still very beloved in Hungary. And if you go to the Imperial Crypt, people leave Hungarian flags by her tomb. So, yeah.
And Erzsébet is everywhere.
Everywhere. Erzsébet. Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, she's such a tragic character, and I didn't realize it because when I was younger, there were these Austrian films about Sisi by the actress Romy Schneider, and they're just so idyllic and beautiful, and they loved each other, and everything was great. And so when you learn about it, you're like, this poor woman had severe mental health issues. She struggled with her weight and the way she looked, and I think... Again, wrong time. If she was in modern day, it'd be a completely different story.
And I think that was around the time where the media really started to really play a big role in politics. And it was almost like when we studied, Alice Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt's daughter.
She's amazing.
Like, she really was also a real sensation.
Yeah.
Like, people would write and write all these things, and it had to be really hard because you never grew up in that type of an environment.
No. And she just wanted to be free, and she had so much pull over Franz Josef, and she did things where, you know, lessened criminals being shackled to walls and running the gauntlet and then helping with the Hungarian unification. But yeah, it was the wrong time and the wrong place for her. I think she would have been happy, or who knows? I mean, yeah. But she was really mean about her ugly daughter.
How much of what they wrote did they think was going to be private?
Well, that was actually an interesting thing that I didn't add, is that she wrote a ton of poetry, and she sealed it and said it couldn't be published until 1950 because she didn't want her friends to find out, I guess. And she was talking about the Vienna court, and I didn't go into detail about it at all, but she pretty much... died, and then in 1951 they published her poems, which is very interesting. And a lot of her stuff got destroyed because of World War II, and yeah, just an absolutely fascinating story. Yeah, so.
No, this was great.
Yeah, you enjoyed it?
I did. I hope you all enjoyed it as well, our listeners at home or at
so much.
Your
I feel
car.
Like I could add so much more, but I no. People can read
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean... No, this is just to whet the appetite and then go on Wikipedia and then fall into a
rabbit
wormhole.
Yeah. Wormhole. And then we're going to take a break from podcasting until the new year. So early January. Whoa. Yeah.
Aww.
I know. But early January, I already have the next topic, which I'm not going to say what it is.
Oh, come on.
No. And I will be surprised. I'm very excited. And yeah, you can always check out the Farrell Batsby Instagram page. There'll be some more pictures. I posted some of her children a few days ago. Also, thank you for liking and subscribing.
Well, thank you for all being part of this journey. This has been really fun.
It's been fun. Yeah, this is episode 8.
We're getting
8.
Great feedback.
Great feedback. Yeah, somebody said it was gossipy history.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, thanks. yeah, and I think that's about it. So Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy New Year.
Yeah, hug the ones you love.
Yeah, stay safe.
Love the ones you're with.
Pray for peace, and we're out. Eat just ba-ba.
Bye.